Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The base is loaded and one out.
Oh my God.
Deep to right field. Way up there and way out of here. Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam.
Hello and welcome in everyone to episode 183 of the Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Kurland. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. And today, it's not nighttime, it is daytime, and I'm joined during this wonderful, beautiful day by my friend, my partner in crime, if you will, George Montanez @_@_Roto_Nino. George.
What's up, man? Happy New Year.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Happy New Year. We talked for like 20 minutes before this and neither one of us said it. So
that's right.
I don't feel so guilty.
Yeah, got right into baseball talk. But
we're drafting.
Yeah, we are. Yep. Talking about our drafts. Good times.
Oh, always. And we're going to talk about catchers to start the new year, because why not start the new year on such a high note? You know, catchers, everyone loves catcher talk. We're going to discuss our top 20s today, discuss guys we're higher on, lower on, players that maybe we have concerns on for some reason. And before we get into it, though, few things, some stuff we have to touch on here for some housekeeping, if you will. First off, 5-star rating review goes a long way. It's greatly appreciated. 2, we are now sponsored by a partnership, and it's with Underdog Fantasy. We talked about it, you and I and a couple of guys over there, you know, me, you, Simeon, Bubba, all the GTE crew. We're sponsored by Underdog. We're going to go ahead and jump into some best balls there. And if you use our code and our first time user promo code GTE, very simple, 3 letters, GTE, you get 100% deposit match. Yeah, 100% deposit match up to $100. Yeah, this whole read thing, got to get used to this. So if you're a first-time user and you want to come hang out with us and play some best balls with us, which we're about to get started doing over there at Underdog, it's promo code GTE. You can support us by, you know, joining and using our code. Terrible ad read, I'm aware, but it's a first time.
Hey, first one, yeah. The first one, they'll get better. You're good. I'm excited to start jumping into those.
I will make sure to somehow be very, very corny and and just very like, speaking of, you know, like really, really awkward transitions. I'm looking forward to that. But until then, that was as awkward and gross as bad as it gets in terms of an ad read. But yeah, Underdog. And with that being said, the shameless plug of the Patreon, we're still pumping stuff out. You got relief pitcher ranks coming up. I just dropped the Michael Harris deep dive, among other things. We have our ranks today. We're talking about our top 20, but we go top 40 per position. So if you want those extra 20 names, if you want to talk about them, watch our risers and fallers all off season, me, you, Bubba, and Simeone, all of our rankings are on GTE Patreon, which is at patreon.com/GTE fantasy. Okay, now I promise we're done. After I stumbled through an ad read, after I promoted all this stuff, now it's 3 minutes in. If you're still around, we appreciate you. And let's talk catchers. First and foremost, how are you approaching catcher this
year? Honestly, I think there's a lot of different ways you can approach it. I think it really just depends on the roster construction. Like, I'm not someone that's like, well, this is where I need to get my first catcher by, you know, it just depends on where I'm at, like with my stats projections and what I'm trying to accomplish, like with my roster build. So like there's pockets of value, of course, with where I'm looking at, like with every position. So like, I don't mind waiting and to be like the last one to grab catchers, or it just depends really. It's really just going to depend on the draft.
So I made a point to like be like anti-catcher in early drafts. And I realized, I look back to my early drafts and man, is my catcher situation bad? Not only did I wait on the wrong catchers, trades happened. And this is when drafting early is a bad idea. Cause right now I have early teams with catcher position scraping for plate appearances. So I'm already playing from behind. I should have, that means I should have strengths in other spots, of course. But right now my catchers, it made me consider my approach. And I think I'm going to be more almost like closer, get that one good catcher early and then play maybe, like, especially in two catcher leagues, get the one solid catcher early, top five, top seven guy, and then go ahead and match him up later with somebody else type of thing. You know what I mean? I'm not going to go ahead and wait until I'm past my top 20s. I want two of my top 20 guys. I do realize that now, but entering the year, I was kind of not anti-catcher, but willing to wait. Now I'm like, I'm willing to pay the premium for the Realmuto's and Barstow types. I don't mind, because I'm starting to see how there's a benefit to doing that in terms of like team construction. Especially, it's almost like getting an elite tight end in football, where it just gives you that production level from a position where no one else is getting that production level from. And I see the value in that, especially as a way to stand out. Because if you're going to catch a sleeper, catcher isn't the likely place to find one. Don't get me wrong, there's a couple names here we'd like late. We've talked about them previously. But we'll probably talk about him again today. It's just one of those things where we can't, at this position, banking on that type of upside from the catcher spot is kind of hard to do. And I'm altering my initial approach right now.
Right. And I think my mindset kind of comes from doing like a lot of 15 teamers, like DCs and stuff, mm-hmm. where you're going to have other holes, and, you know, getting those plate appearances from the other positions and stuff is important. Getting elite pitching for me is important. 15 teamers where, like, if I'm talking about like a 10 or 12 team league, then yeah, I totally want to get like at least one top catcher to kind of anchor that position, and then take some chances, later in the mid to late rounds. So I think that's definitely where my approach and strategy with the position would change. Like if it were a shallower league or if it were like a one catcher league, like, yeah, I want the best one, or I want one of the top guys.
So at the top, now that we're 10 minutes in, because who needs to get to the content right away? JT Realmuto, Dalton Varsho, there's no difference here. I think we could both agree that Realmuto and Varsho kind of in that top tier because they're the five category producers. And what makes the difference mm-hmm. up for me, at least from Realmuto over Varsho, is the batting average floor is higher.
Yeah.
Varsho mm-hmm. has great lineup context as well. Going to get plenty of plate appearances regardless. He's not going to platoon as much as people think, but the plate appearances he gets, even if he were to platoon, is still top tier for a catcher. So this year in redraft specifically, I think he belongs in the top two at this position. And I don't think it's relatively close in terms of anyone else, just because there's another catcher that really offers that stolen base upside. Would you agree?
I'm with you there. I agree. Like Realmuto, rock solid foundational piece. You know, I wouldn't expect 20 steals again. But yeah, he's going to give you five categories. I didn't realize last year he only started two games at DH. I kind of had it in my head that maybe he started more, but with Harper being like DH only, just limited to Realmuto to catcher. But he was playing catcher like every day down the stretch. He was playing a ton, so he still got those 562 plate appearances. And now you think like with Harper maybe out until like the All-Star break, or, you know, who knows when he's coming, but maybe Realmuto gets some more games in at DH early on, because, you know, Harper will be taking that spot when he returns. But yeah, I mean, Realmuto is going to give you, you know, good 20, 10 and solid average, good counting stats across the board. So yeah, I like him there. And then with Varsho, the only thing with Varsho is like, you have to limit the number of like batting average risks you take early in the draft if you take a Varsho. But I do agree that like he's definitely number two with his power speed combo. The only risk there is maybe the batting average. So like I said, like you just kind of plan around that. If you've taken, say you took like a Jordan Alvarez in the first round, you take an Alvarez and you're like, okay, I need to supplement some speed now. Varsho is a great target to grab because you've got that solid batting average foundation with Alvarez. But like I say, if I've taken like a Bobby Witt, or if I plan to take like a Trevor Story or Jazz, someone who's like a much higher batting average risk, I'm probably not compounding that with Dalton Varsho. Probably going a different direction. But yeah, I definitely agree these two are the top two guys.
And that leads us to Will Smith at number three for us, Adley at number four. We are lockstep so far through four. Will Smith, it's a high floor. Ceiling isn't even bad. It's just kind of a mix of high floor, decent ceiling, and you know what you're getting, solid, steady production. Mm-hmm. Adley at four, this is where the upside kicks in because, you know, we're seeing him entering his first full season, second year overall. We know the skill set is there. We know he has all these, like he flashes in terms of skill set. And not to mention just overall, like some of the metrics are there, the upside, it's interesting. But I feel like this is where the position starts getting pick your poison in terms of proven production and potential.
Yeah, I love the potential with Adley. I think he's definitely going to develop into a beast. Like, he's already, you know, flashed some really good skills last year. The only concern I have with Adley is the lefty splits. He had just a 552 OPS against lefties, 22.6% strikeout rate. Yeah, he was not very good against lefties last year. That's the only little concern for me there is the lefty splits. But otherwise, yeah, I think he's definitely there, like in that top five, just because like the plate approach, the discipline, the contact, like, you know, he much better against righties. But yeah, 13.8% walk rate, you gotta love that. He's gonna score a ton of runs. He'll even chip in a few steals. The power's still developing, but I think, you know, it can get, you know, 15 plus. So yeah, I think Adley's a really good
one. I feel like Adley has the floor is lower than Will Smith, and that's why he falls behind him. But the ceiling, we can argue the ceiling is a little higher. That's why I feel like, although I prefer Will Smith, I'm really in on Adley because you can get Adley after him. I have no Adley shares for someone. I can't say I'm really in on somebody if I don't have any Adley shares. So there is that. But it's funny because it goes back to how I attack the position. So it's not a lack of not wanting them. It's just a lack of ending up with them just because I was catcher. I was adverse to catcher early. But the next guy here, I'm higher on him in our ranks, but you're higher on him in terms of, I think it's because you took advantage of the early discount. William Contreras, I have fifth, you have sixth. We literally have him flip-flop, it's no big deal. The next two in our ranks each, William Contreras and Salvador Perez. I have William Contreras over Salvador, and I'll make my case here in a moment. But you're a William Contreras guy, you have a lot of early shares. Are you going to buy in at what's likely the new cost, which is going to be a top 100 pick easily?
Yeah, I'm still very much in on William Contreras. I do have Salvi just ahead of him just because of the track record. But William Contreras, he's right there. You gotta love the plate discipline, the batted ball metrics are just off the charts. The trade is only gonna help him going to Milwaukee. The only concern with him in Atlanta was the playing time, how he was gonna split time with Darnell, but now in Milwaukee, you got to imagine like he is the full-time catcher there. I'm hoping for, you know, 500 plate appearances. And with that, I mean, he hit 20 homers and 376 plate appearances last year. Does strike out a lot, but it kind of overcomes that a bit with just how hard he hits the ball. 46.6% hard hit rate, 13.4% barrel rate is just awesome for a catcher. I mean, so yeah, I'm big time willing. I think there's, you know, 25 plus homer power here. In that bat and playing every day for Milwaukee. I mean, yeah, I see the Salvi upside for sure.
So here's my argument for Contreras over Salvi, because I made this change very last minute right before I did my videos, which, by the way, if you're into fantasy baseball and want to get into like, and you actually want YouTube content, Gaining the Edge, GTE Fantasy on YouTube. I'm dropping a whole bunch of content there. So check that out as well. But I talked about my top 10, and my argument for Contreras over Salvi was essentially, I know we're kind of hoping Contreras is what Salvi has been, but Salvi's on the wrong, that's kind of what we're hoping for, but Salvi's on the wrong side of 30, and that swing and miss in his profile and the willingness to just the free swinging tendencies for Salvador Perez, that has me concerned just because we've seen how that profile could potentially not age well. So you're taking a guy who's getting older, dealing with, you know, fluky injuries nonetheless, and an approach that could age drastic, could just fall off a cliff drastically. That has me scared off just enough to put Contreras ahead of him, because Contreras, on the other hand, entering his prime, and I think he's like 23, 24 years old, wherever he is. You mentioned all the flashy numbers. The power metrics are off the charts. 97th percentile max exit velocity, 91st percentile barrel rate, 84th percentile hard hit rate for William Contreras. And you mentioned, I think there's a path to 500 plus play appearances as well via DH, catcher. There's no reason why he won't get there. Plus hitting the middle of that lineup in that ballpark. I think the floor for batting average can be around 240-ish or so for Contreras, but I'm willing to take that gamble on just that power potential alone, because I think that's what we hope for from Perez. You know, like, he makes a ton of contact, but that free swinging nature just scares me as he gets older.
Yeah.
And I think that's all it is.
Yeah, like I have Perez ranked just above him, just yeah, because of the track record and everything. But I could see a path to Perez like just being a two category guy as well. And so like in just home runs and RBI, because of his plate approach, you know, he doesn't walk a lot. There's a lot of risk of that with the Royals lineup. So I worry about with Royals players like about their counting stats. So there is a path to where, you know, Salvi's just a two category guy, whereas Contreras, I think. Yeah, he can be that too, but he's also going much later. Even in the December ADP, like he's at like 128. I've done a couple DCs where he's gone maybe like right around like 110, 120. So I still like that price very much more than, you know, going 40 picks earlier and having to take Perez. So yeah. I'm still gonna have a lot more William Contreras, but yeah, I do see the downside for Perez, but I do think he's like really safe as far as like for power and RBI at the catcher position.
Yeah, not to mention you have one of our guys here we'll get to later in Melendez, who's gonna likely catch a bit and give, you know, help keep Salvador Perez locked in the middle of that lineup and healthy. But Wilson Contreras, we both have him in the same spot, and I think we can just agree that it's just a matter of health with him. He doesn't play a lot. He's only played over 115 games twice since 2018, I think it is, and 115 is not exactly a high mark. The power is there. He's going to hit in the middle of a solid order, but now we're also adding in first year of a new contract, like a big contract at a new place. That, you know, we've seen that hinder players in the recent past. So I think seventh is a fair say. I think it's fair value and safe value. And I think that's where he's going in ADP anyway. So it's kind of like we're in tune with ADP, and I like him as a like, quote unquote fallback option. Like if I'm falling back on Wilson Contreras, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there. You pretty much hit on everything. Yeah.
And then the next guy here for you, and I keep alternating him between him and Melendez. Melendez, we're lockstep here. Same two names, just one over the other. MJ Melendez and Alejandro Kirk, 8 and 9 for us in one way or another. I have Kirk behind him right now, but I have Kirk ahead of him if you ask me tomorrow, probably, just because I have a hard time. This is where I'm having a hard time balancing floor versus ceiling. And I think what we see with Kirk is a high floor, elite contact, elite like plate approach. There's no arguing that. It's the fact that even with all the plate appearances that he'll likely get again this year, that he got last year, and with the ballpark and the team context, he still only hit 14 home runs. He has the power metrics, but if you look at his approach, it's an all fields approach for Kirk. An all fields approach.
And a lot of ground balls.
And a lot of ground balls. And when you look at his pull rate, it's like 60 something or 70 something percent of pulled ground balls for Kirk. So if you're asking this guy to change his approach, that will take away from his other attributes in terms of what he brings to the table. And plus asking a player to change his approach and change something like that drastic it's a lot to ask. It's a lot to expect. So it's like, it's easy to say, oh, if he only did this. Yeah, but only doing this takes a lot from a player. And I think it took me a couple years to realize you can't assume every player is going to make these changes. Regardless, I that's what keeps me like down on him, because I know the high floor is there, but I value ceiling at this position. And that's where MJ Melendez gives us, you know, he has that ceiling, not quite the safe floor, but we know he can hit 30 home runs and wouldn't surprise anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do. I mean, Kirk, the thing that worries me about Kirk too, is like that he really kind of came down to earth in the second half, was much better in the first half, but I still have Kirk over him just because I think he's pretty safe as far as the batting average goes. I think he's a pretty safe bet to hit for a decent average. And I think he's still going to give you like maybe 15 homers. Whereas, yeah, Melendez has that, you know, 25, 30 homer upside. And the thing I like about Melendez too is, I mean, he had the highest walk rate on that team, like even higher than Vinny Pasquantino.
He led off at times last year too.
Right. So I think that he's probably pretty safe to hit at the, near the top of that order, just because not a lot of hitters on that team have that kind of plate approach. So I think he should have one of those spots at the top of the order. So you got to love that for a catcher. So yeah, I think there's a lot to like with Melendez here. Like this is like where I'm okay passing on some of the earlier guys and grabbing a William Contreras or MJ Melendez where they're going.
Yeah, and that's why I don't know. I keep going back on this Kirk thing too, and I'm like, I honestly just keep finding ways to move him down instead of up. And I know I'm gonna get burnt by it, but I'll take a gamble on upside. And another guy, and we both have our top 10 rounded out by Sean Murphy. And I think it's really as simple as although he loses plate appearances going to Atlanta, I don't think it's gonna be as drastic as everyone thinks. We saw Atlanta multiple times utilize Contreras and Darnell at the same times. I think as long as Murphy's hitting, they're going to utilize him as a DH to keep the batting lineup anyway. Because, and on top of that, what, they don't really have anybody else. What, Ozuna, if they still believe in him. So I think Murphy's going to get a good amount of at bats. And he had 37 doubles last year. And I keep harping on that because 37 doubles in that division where he was at and that home ballpark, bringing that over to Atlanta, I think that we can see 18 home runs turn into 22, 23. So he's going to give up a little bit of quantity, but gain quality. So it's a small net positive for me, but I don't think it's a huge gain. Like my initial gut reaction was like, oh my God, huge. But then you realize, wait, he got like 600 play appearances as a catcher last year. So that's probably gonna be closer to 450. But if that's 450, if that's 450 in the Braves lineup hitting, you know, around seventh in that lineup, I still like it. And I think it's similar counting stats to what he had in all those play appearances in freaking Oakland. So I think, like, yeah. I think it's a small net positive because I think we get more power here. I just don't think, and I think we get more play appearances than we might realize just because of how we saw Atlanta approach the DH last year with both catchers and considering a lack of depth and options for DH otherwise too there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you there. We're going to, like, we've seen his price kind of shoot up since the trade too.
Now, Tyler Stevenson, we both have at 11. I have no interest there. I don't have any interest there. And I can't, like, I rank him there, but it's like, I think it's just because it's the ballpark and it's the fact that, you know, he's going to play every day and you put those together and you just hope that he can kind of put it together. Cause I think it's almost like everyone else. He has that power. He's a big dude. He's a big guy, but I think he hits too many ground balls. I'm just like, I can't get behind it. Is there anything there for you?
No. Yeah. We still haven't seen that raw power develop into game power. We're just not seeing it despite the home park. And then I feel like you can't ignore like the injury risks there too with Stevenson. I feel like I ranked him here because I felt like I kind of had to.
look at the catcher position. Like there's no, it's not like you, even if you feel like you just have to, like I actually have to move down Travis Darnell, but not much, like, because I think we're just higher than a few people. I actually have to move up a few. We'll get to a couple guys I need to move up here. These are our ranks before some of these trades happen. That's why. But yeah, we're talking about ground ball right now. He did improve it last year. He did improve it from 49.6% in 2021 to 41.3% last year. And he pulled the ball. So there was an approach change, which is what gives me reason to believe that, you know, he can maybe figure it out because he's actively trying to. That's Tyler Stevenson I'm talking about. And when you're making, you know, almost what, 91%, 87% Z contact rates, those are like pretty dang elite contact rates for a catcher. I'd like to think that he could put it together. And that's why I think there's a little bit of upside here, even though we've seen pretty much nothing but floor. So I think Stevenson he's going to stay there for me just based on that. Cause we actively saw a change, at least an attempt of a change in approach. And I think he'll figure it out. A player with that type of hit tool, if he really makes an effort to change his approach, but he can still sustain some of that hit tool, I'll bet on that a little bit. Mostly because of the ballpark, though. I mean, and he's going to hit in the middle of that lineup. So,
yeah.
If nothing else.
He's, you know, he's a good bet to hit like fourth or fifth. And even on a bad team, I mean, that's going to be great for a catcher. I mean, we just saw it with Murphy.
Yeah. So explain to me your number 12, because I think I see Cal Raleigh and I think Mike Zunino. And I hate that. That's the comp that comes to mind, but it's what I see, man. I'm so scared. I'm not going to have any Cal Raleigh this year. He's down at 16 for me, and I'm going to move him down to 17 by the end of this episode.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like all about that power upside. He's not going in a terrible, like at a terrible price either. I mean, going 158 in December is probably a little too rich for me. But I have him here for that massive power upside. I mean, 27 homers and 415 plate appearances, a lot of pulled fly balls, and that's how you make the most out of your barrels. 15.4% barrel rate, 39 barrels to 27 home runs. When you have a 55.7% fly ball rate and a 47.8% pull rate, so all your barrels are going to the pull side. I mean, he's going to convert a lot of those into homers, and so that's where those 27 come from. And I think he's going to have it. Like, he's one of these, like, if you're looking at the catchers now in this range, like, I don't know if there's anyone that has the potential to match him in like the counting stats. Like, I think he's going to be in a good position to drive in 70. So yeah, I mean, and he does walk a bit too. I also, like, apparently he played with like a torn ligament in his hand, like, in the second half. So I wonder kind of how much that played into into things, but no, I do like Raleigh. I'm not sure how much I'm actually gonna have, but I like the other.
See, it just scares me. Below average contact rates. This is Kyle Raleigh we're talking about here. Below average contact rates, free swinging with swing and miss in his profile. So he's also willing to chase. Nearly 30% K rate last year, I should say. A low 200s batting average, but the power, you're right, the power is unmatched in this range. So I do understand that, but when you have all those red flags, that one green light he has with the power, for me, isn't enough for me to take him. I just can't. I'd rather take Danny Jansen, who's going after him. And Logan, how do you say his last name? Please.
Oh, Hoppy.
Thank you. Yeah. I always want to say Oh Hoppy, and I'm like, no, that's wrong. I think it's Hoppy. I think you're right. I have to go back and listen to like highlights in game film to get some of these names until they come out with the annual. I get it sent to me from The Athletic, the annual like name pronunciation guide.
The pronunciation guide, yeah.
So I usually have to go back and watch film. I still forgot it. Just like I always, like there's a couple guys just in general, I go back and watch it and listen to before. But if I don't actively practice the names out loud, I tend to forget how to say them when we go to podcasts. It's really weird. I have to talk to myself and say the names out loud. And even then, I still forget how to say it. It's not an excuse. I've been doing this long enough I should know better, but I don't get paid to announce. So
yeah.
I have really bad ADHD brain. So there's that.
Now, you know that I'm a Danny Jansen guy. And if you can promise me 120 games from Danny Jansen, like he'd be top 10. On a per game basis, like he's up there. Like if you can just promise me that he'll stay healthy, he would be a top 10. Like he's been awesome. Like on a per plate appearance basis, basically since like it started like in May of 2021, he ended up missing a ton of time then too. But you kind of saw it. You kind of saw something clicked. Something started clicking there for Danny Jansen, where he was incredible in September of 2021, picked right back up last year, but just cannot stay on the field. I feel like, like every swing he's risking an oblique strain. And it's just, it's frustrating because you see the talent. Like he's never struck out too much. He's always had a good plate approach. Started barreling up the ball like crazy, like 13% barrel rate last year, 46% hard hit rate. I mean, yeah, if you can promise me the playing time, he'd be up there. I would have him ranked probably at least three or four spots higher.
Well, I'm going to take the chance on him because I just rather take, I feel like there's a floor, even with the injuries, there's still a higher floor, but with a similar ceiling. So, and not to mention the Blue Jays don't exactly have depth. I think he's going to get a lot of playing time via DH and catcher this year with Kirk. So I think that there's a lot of plate appearances coming his way that could help as long as, and again, if he DHs, that should help. I know DHing is not going to help him stop with the obliques, but in all seriousness and, you know, in theory, it should help him stay healthy. So I'd like to think that we get a healthier Danny Jansen, and I'm okay taking a shot on him just because I think the floor is safer, even though the injury concerns are there. I don't know. I'm just, like I told you, I'm just that low on Raleigh. This is one of those guys where if I'm wrong, I'm going to have to just be okay with it. Like that's all.
Yeah, I do prefer Jansen going 50 picks later than Raleigh. I think, that's a good, I don't have any Jansen yet, but I'm going to have to change that and get Jansen. Cause I mean, I was a big Jansen guy last year and I think I just feel like burned. I'm like, man, I'm buying in. Like I saw that potential in 2021, and I bought all the way in. I had Jansen on just about every team last year. So I'm gonna have to throw a couple shares in there. I'm gonna have to get some Danny Jansen because you could see the same thing I was mentioning with Raleigh, and it started in 2021 with that much higher fly ball rate and the pull rate, 50% fly ball, 52% pull rate. I mean, that's 23 barrels. He got 15 homers out of that. So yeah, you know the power is absolutely legit. And then with that lower strikeout rate, I mean, there's no reason he can't hit 260 again with 25 homers in a full year. And that's definitely top 10 for sure.
And we have Logan Ohapi. How do you say it again? I told you, I'm bad.
Ohapi? Yeah, I don't know.
And I think that's how you, I think you're right. I'm trusting you here, George. And if somebody is listening, you can feel free to DM us or call us out on Twitter. I don't care. Call me out for being wrong. I'm going to look it up again after this episode. But Ohapi, let's call him Logan. And we both have him in that, 13 to 15 range. And talk about upside. Talk about, Dalton Varsho type of upside here, in terms of skill set, power, speed, potential. At least we saw the speed last year flash. And I don't know. I don't know if I should be this excited. I feel like I shouldn't be this excited, but I it's hard not to be when you have a catcher who hit 26 home runs and stole 7 bases in the minors with sub 20% K rates and walked more than he struck out even at one of the stops last year in the minors.
Yeah.
There's a lot of excitement there. And it's not, it wasn't just last year. This plate approach, this plate discipline was always a strong one going back all the way to 2018 in rookie ball. So yeah, there's no reason not to buy in, right?
You could see a Danny Jansen type of hitter here. I mean, I don't know the hitting environment that he was in last year in the minors, but you got to love the 26 homers. And like you said, he chipped in some steals too. So, yeah, I think there's big time potential here with Ohapi. He should start the year like as their catcher. I mean, Max Stassi is not good. I think he had like a sub 600 OPS. Max Stassi is not a good hitter. I don't see any reason why Ohapi shouldn't get the chance to run with the everyday job there at catcher. Just looking it up. Yeah, 571 OPS for Max Stassi. That's not good.
He always deals with injury too, though. And I think part of it was injury. You know, part of it was injury issues. But Ohapi was
And you gotta like what the Angels have done with their lineup, like adding Hunter Renfro, adding Brandon Drury, adding Gio Urshela. I mean, you gotta love what they're doing. And so, I think Ohapi, like, he's someone where, like, if I've just completely bypassed catchers, like, he's one that at his cost, he's going in like the 260. Like, I don't mind waiting and grabbing him as my first catcher.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. This is where, like, I feel like the back end of, like, if you're going to wait on catcher, you need to grab him and Danny Jansen or him. And, like, you need to get, like, a little aggressive here and grab two of them in this range. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, in shallower formats, this is where you take your upside. Like, I'm taking him over. I'm taking Logan over a few names. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said Varsho because of the stolen bases, but I don't think he has that type of stolen base upside. I just think that we saw 6 stolen bases. I got really 7, I think, and I said got really excited. Got really excited seeing 7 stolen bases from a catcher. But yeah,
I think he may not be a zero, but yeah, he won't.
You know, I want to believe. Obviously, yeah, I want to believe that the stolen bases are a thing. But regardless, I want to take a shot on the catcher for this lineup, this team. Although it's gonna be a bottom third of the lineup spot. It's just the fact that it's going to be a decent team and there's upside. And I think it's hard to find that at the catcher position. So you're getting upside and you're getting a guy who should play most days because Stassi will miss time. And I feel like they'll let the young kid get run. So I don't know. I could see myself moving him down though. As I see, you know, if Keibert Ruiz comes back around, like he showed flashes last year, if he can show, and he was a top 7 to 10 guy for most people last year, so he's a guy I have just behind him. I could move him up. Moreno, if we actually get word that he's going to be starting, like I have him 15th right now, Gabriel Moreno, after the trade. Mm-hmm. He should be the starter there, but there's always a chance that Arizona tries to play games with the service time, so I don't know if we're going to get him breaking camp. I'm kind of treating him like he's going to break camp with the team, but I could see myself moving Gabriel Moreno up or down. We're still waiting on news there. I think there's a very safe profile there with Moreno as well. Is there anything?
Oh, absolutely. He's going to have one of the better hit tools at the position, like by far.
And that's the thing. It's like, it goes back to, but here's the thing is I feel like right now Logan is, I have a hard time saying his first name. It's just weird to me. It's called someone, cause I refuse to butcher the last name anymore, but I feel like he's a little safer for playing time. I think this is where I can understand why you're taking Cal Raleigh over these guys, because there's questions for playing time here for most of them. But I just, that's how low I am on Raleigh, man. I just can't get behind him, but we should move on beyond him. I don't see
Baseball anything. Reference has the pronunciation as Ohapi.
Ohapi.
Ohapi. Yeah.
Ohapi. Okay. Thank you for looking that up on the fly. My Paragraphs is trashing my internet right now, so I haven't been able to do anything. So Ohapi. Logan Ohapi. Took us 20 minutes of talking about him for us to get the last name. Towards the back end of our top 20s here, I know we haven't gone in a set order because we have similar names, just different orders, but one guy you have in your top 20, I don't. Eric Haas, what are your thoughts on him? You think he's going to build off what we saw late last year?
Yeah, and I think we kind of saw it the previous year as well. I think he's just a pretty safe bet for power. So we saw that again, you know, 14 homers over just 351 plate appearances. I think he should probably start just about every game against lefties. He'll probably get some. He'll get plenty of time against righties as well, but. Yeah, he's pretty much like a lefty smasher. Hit 281 against lefties. Didn't do too bad against righties. Hit 239 last year against righties with 10 of his 14 homers. So yeah, I have Haas up there just because like there is the batting average floor. He did hit 254 last year, so it's not terrible, but there is a floor there just with his strikeout rate. But I think the power is pretty safe.
Yeah.
And so when you're picking catchers, I feel like, if you're picking catchers like in this range, you're like at in this range of the draft, you're like, okay, I could bank on 15 homers here from my, you know, second catcher or whatever. So yeah, that's why I have them up here, just for the the power floor.
I think I'm going to move them up. I'm actually pretty low on Christian Vasquez. I know he signed to the Twins. Everyone thinks that's a great move. I think he's going to end up splitting more time there than most places with Jensen. Not Jensen. Help me out here. What's his name? Jeffers. With Ryan Jeffers. Yeah. I think Jeffers is still going to factor in heavily there. So I don't know if we see as much Vasquez as we think we're gonna see there. So Vasquez is a guy that I have just outside my top 20 that – We both have them just outside the top 20. But to be fair, that's because we are factoring in guys that should get catcher eligibility. Guys like Shay Langeliers and Francisco Alvarez, I have in my top 20, but that's with asterisk of they're going to gain catcher eligibility. If they do not gain catcher eligibility, then Vasquez becomes a top 20 guy for us. So just know that I wanted to make sure that we mentioned the non-catcher guys that could gain catcher eligibility is Francisco Alvarez and Shay Langeliers. Those are guys, talk about upside. Those two have a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I have Langeliers up there at 19. So similar to like Sean Murphy last year, he could probably play a ton there in Oakland. And he did show some good power. So yeah, I do like Langeliers. I think I have him back to back with Eric Haas. I think Langeliers could be like a similar.
And then we have a guy that we both like. I'm just looking at the end here, the end of the top 20. And there's so much upside here if these guys actually get run, but I don't think we're going to see like Bo Naylor, Andy Rodriguez, both guys that I know. I think the industry as a whole is really in on Andy. I think it's just a matter of the Pirates probably aren't. I know the Pirates went out and got, I think, who was it? Either way, they went out and got a veteran guy when they didn't have a catcher at all, pretty much on their roster. And you know how we saw how they treated O'Neill Cruz last year. If they treated O'Neill Cruz like that, I don't see how they're going to let Andy Rodriguez be up sooner than later, unfortunately, because I really thought we were gonna see him be like a May call up, and we still could be, because Rodriguez has nothing to prove in the minors, and in terms of like skill set at the catcher position, Andy Rodriguez has a high end like four category skill set potential, I should say, and it's really upsetting because you know there's power there, there's plate discipline for Andy Rodriguez, and that's the type of stuff you really would like to see from a prospect, let alone a catching prospect. So he has these skills that can make him very fantasy friendly, but right now it's the wrong team, unfortunately.
Yeah, and one guy I have just outside my top 20 that I actually have been drafting a lot as like my second catcher, Nick Fortes, and I know Bubba did a good write up on late round. Catching targets for draft and holds, and Fortes was featured on there. So I'm also a big Nick Fortes fan. I like the contact ability, strikes out less than 20% of the time. He even stole five bases, had nine homers, five steals in just 240 plate appearances last year for Miami. I don't think he's going to keep that pace up, but the fact that he has like a decent amount of power, because he does have a good fly ball and pull rate. So, you know, barreled up 12 balls, got nine homers out of that. I think there's maybe 12 homers here with a handful of steals. And yeah, I'll take a handful of steals from my second catcher. Absolutely. And then I do think that that 252 BABIP is going to come up as well. So I think there's a pretty good 250 hitter with a little bit of upside on that, with maybe a dozen homers and a handful of steals. And I do think he's probably going to split time. I think the 227 projected plate appearances from Steamer is a bit low. I do think that he probably splits time with Stallings.
And a guy that I like that I'm actually going to move up my ranks a little bit is Jonah Heim. I think that there's playing time there. Mm-hmm. He hit 16 home runs even while hitting 227 last year. And it's like, well, why do you like a 227 hitter, Michael? Well, sub 20% K rate and 9% walk rate for Heim. 16 home runs, playing time should be there. Limited play. So I can't think of the word competition. Mm-hmm. Sam Huff, I think, is the main competition there, but Sam Huff's like more of like a power bat first type of guy. We saw Heim have an 85th percentile max exit velocity, and he's sitting about average in hard hit rate and stuff like that. So, and his barrel rate's also about, you know, it's not great, 6.9%. I'm not gonna act like it's good, but the percentile was 43%. Like, yeah, it's okay. Hard hit rate's 50.9%, so it's okay. But it's more so the plate approach, the fact that he has a very patient approach and he makes decent contact. But I think I'm looking it up right now on the fly is the splits, the shift, because he's a switch hitter. And he was shifted against 78. He was shifted against 78.2% of the time last year for Heim was. Against Woba without the shift, Woba no shift, 344. Woba against the shift, 263. It's almost a, it's like an 80. It's like an 80-point difference. So I have a hard time fading a guy that should continue to make good contact, makes hard enough contact, and likely benefits from the banning of the shift. And again, at catcher, playing time, plate approach with a little bit of power upside, and a team that's getting better consistently over there in Texas. I'm in. I've talked myself more into him, and I got to move him up into my top 20. And I don't have any share. I don't have any shares, but that's going to change.
I think I have him right at 20. Yeah, I have him right there, right at 20. But I do also like Jonah Heim. And yeah, like to your point, he had a 239 BABIP against righties from the left-handed side to a 271 BABIP from the right side against left-handers. So he did strike out a little bit more. So generally, he is a little bit worse against left-handers. But I do think that the BABIP from that side is going to come up a little bit. So, the shift band is definitely something that help Heim get that batting average up.
Not to mention, like I said, my thing is that the shift, you said the shift. Oh, my God. I'm losing my train of thought because my kid's in the background talking. Doesn't matter. I wanted to look up the splits because I think there was a second half thing I wanted to talk about. But I can't, right? I literally can't get FanGraphs to stay loaded. And it keeps freezing. It keeps asking me, do I want to wait? And it's aggravating me. But I'm wondering, I wish I could look up second half split, because like the second half he fell off, and I'm wondering why. And I'm wondering why. And did they start shifting him more in the second half? Was he just figured out? Did they attack him differently? He requires a deeper dive, because what changed so drastically? Because in the second half, Heim had a 589 OPS compared to a 781 OPS, but then he had absolutely elite plate discipline. 11.4% walk rate, 18.4% K rate. Was he just too patient? Was he being
BABIP came down to 206 BABIP, so yeah, there might be something to what you're saying there.
I'm just wondering
the
what
BABIP
happened.
Was only 206. Yeah.
I don't know what happened. I'm wondering if they just learned to shift him properly, like, because he was still, his bat was kind of breaking out for the first time last year. He wasn't really, there was really no game plan on him. So I'm wondering if in the second half, did they get more of like more tape on him, more game plan? Like, all right, this is where, like, maybe they shifted on him a little bit, but they really shifted on him like just perfectly in the second half, and it stopped him from being as productive. And I'm looking up his pull numbers from the let's see, his pull rate. Heim's pull ground balls, 50% pull ground balls. So he does pull a lot of ground balls, but his pull rate was also just, he had like a 50-something% pull rate in general. So he's a pull ball hitter. So with such a pull ball approach for Heim, I think the shift band really benefits him even more so than the average person, because any lefty who pulls the ball a lot should benefit from the shift band. So at the end of the day, I really do like his odds. And again, it comes back to cost and playing time and potential. And they kind of checks all those boxes. So yeah, that's going to be my last, guys. Is there anybody else you want to mention? Anybody out? I think I don't want to fit almost an hour on catchers. That's more than enough than for me.
Yeah.
Catchers.
I mean, there's a few interesting guys. Like I had to move. I had Bo Naylor much higher, but I had to move him down just because I'm not so sure that he's ready. I'm not so sure that the Guardians believe that he's ready. So I'm not sure the playing time is going to be there. And then you wonder how much contact he's going to make, at least in his first year in the major. So I had to move Bo Naylor down, but he's also incredibly interesting because of his speed potential. He went 20-20 in the minors last year. And then another guy I know we both like is Luis Campuzano, who basically like just doesn't have anything left to prove in the minor leagues.
There's a path to playing time right now, because I thought I thought they were linked to a couple catchers, I think, this offseason, but Nola isn't that guy. Austin Nola is not good enough to stop them from giving Campuzano a shot, in my opinion. Not to mention Campuzano only has one option left. He's 24 years old. And we've seen how they treat their top prospects. They're rather aggressive. So if Campuzano shows he's ready in spring, I think he gets first shot. Not only just for, I think they're going to, he might just be the better catcher right now too, defensively, which is also could benefit him in fantasy because it gets him that playing time. So yeah, I'm with you 100%.
Yeah. I think that's just about it. Yeah.
We're good now. All right. Well, I'm not gonna lie, man. I feel really out of it. Like you could tell I've stumbled my way through parts of this episode, and I feel really like maybe we need to get back into a groove, George. But with that being said, With that being said, check out the Underdog deal. Use GTE promo code to get your 100% price match guarantee up to $100. Patreon.com/GTEFantasy. Five star rating review or four star, because honestly, I'm not sure we're worth five anymore, but whatever. I'll take it if you want to feel nice. And we'll see you guys next time. I think I'm recording with Simeon tomorrow, and we're going to aim for first base, you and I, and whoever else we can get on next
week. Yep, that sounds good.
All right, man. We'll talk soon. Everyone, appreciate you guys checking us out. And yeah, catch you next week or next episode or whatever.